there. Welcome to the Imperial Security Bureau podcast. Today we have an outstanding guest. His name is Ayman Elsawa. He is a fractional CISO. He's awesome to talk to. We're going to cover many subjects here, but first let's visit his LinkedIn. And here he is, Ayman Elsawa. He is currently the fractional CISO for his company is called Cloud Security Labs. He consults with startups, mostly SaaS startups. He's also involved in a lot of other things. He's got a podcast. He's involved in the CISO Society. And he also coaches people on how to become fractional CISOs as well. And we'll chat about that. But let's go into his background. He has a major in computer science. He started his career as a network engineer and then moved into cybersecurity. Typical move from engineer to architect to CISO to fractional. If you want to chat with him, he has a website, coffeewithayman.com. He uses calendar booking links, all of those. And he's on YouTube and he's got a lot of content out there, so check him out. But here we go. All right. Welcome to the podcast, Ayman. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. I got my espresso, and I'm ready to go.
Espresso. I hear you. 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's never too late, you know? Never too late. If you need it, take it. I would not, because it would ruin my sleep. But if some people, it doesn't impact, right? There's no impact. And you're one of the lucky ones if you can still go to bed.
Well, it's still before 12 over here, so it's 11 right. a.m. over here, so
that's right.
It's my you're on first the one of the day. So, did you know espresso has less caffeine than a regular drip coffee?
I would have thought the opposite. So,
yeah.
I just learned something. A couple warm up questions. I know you're a sci-fi nerd like me. I normally ask about your favorite Star Wars movie. In case you didn't know, I'm a Star Wars fan. Not Acolyte, by the way. But what's your favorite movie? And then what's your favorite band or musician?
I think favorite movie is Interstellar. I saw it in 70mm in the movie theater.
Very cool.
So that was good. The soundtrack was amazing. The, cutting back and forth, the whole idea, like just everything was just really amazing about it. As far as favorite band, there's no one particular. I like a lot of electronic music. So I listen, digitally imported. DI.FM, been listening to that for like a long time. Or Soma FM. They even have Soma FM has a DEFCON channel as well.
Interesting. I have to look that up. Have you ever heard of Phonk? Phonk?
No. Yeah, that's interesting.
It's like hip hop, but they basically take 90s Memphis rap.
Okay.
And they kind of tone down the voice, so that it kind of is like mumbling in the background. And then they just add on like techno beats on top of it. It's pretty cool. I like working to that sometimes. Yeah, funk. There's a couple of YouTube stations. Check that out.
What's your favorite sci-fi movie?
The show that's fresh on my mind is I just rewatched The Terminal List on Amazon. Oh, man, that show is so good. It's the third time I've been through it. I don't know if you've seen that show. Yeah,
I don't think I have,
so good. Yeah, The Terminal List, Chris Pratt, based on, I think it's Jack Carr, his books. They've even got more of those shows coming out. I can't wait for them.
Wow.
That's really cool. But, yeah, I'm a Star Wars nerd. I mean, I love Rogue One and Andor.
Oh, okay.
Those Andor are my favorites.
Good. Andor was good. What's your favorite character out of all of Star Wars?
The one that I'm most intrigued to know more about is Kira.
Oh.
Kira, the last time we saw her was in the movie Solo. She hops in Ivan Drass's yacht ship. She abandons Solo, and she's off to see Darth Maul. Where is that story going to go? But, I mean, my favorite character is always going to be Darth Vader. You know, he's misunderstood. He engineered the rebellion from behind the scenes. He knew what was going on the whole time. He's playing both sides. He's actually a good guy. I know you're a coffee guy here. What is your favorite coffee and why?
Well, I like to use light roast coffee. That way I'm tasting the bean and not the roast. I have actually a list of a few roasters that I put on my personal website, because people ask me this all the time. Like, what's a good coffee roasting place? One of the things I love to do is just go around the country and find really interesting roasters that have good coffee, because it's kind of like a it's like a treasure hunt to find that right coffee. I like African coffees. Ethiopia's are really good. Kenya is my favorite.
What should people be concerned about when it comes to buying coffee?
Oh, I'm actually doing a whole course on this for free. I'm going to post a whole course on this. I think the one thing you can do to improve your coffee is grind your beans fresh. That's it. If there's one thing you wanted to do that would give you like the 80-20 rule as far as coffee, is grinding it fresh. So getting whole beans, because the bean oxidizes right when it's ground and it starts getting dull, like old, right? So you want it to be nice and fresh. I think whatever way you're brewing coffee, machine, whatever it may be, I'm not gonna be judgmental. If you just grind it fresh, you will dramatically improve your coffee.
I have a love-hate relationship with coffee. I can't quit coffee. I've tried. I've tried to do like a 30-day quick coffee challenge and I made it 10 days and caved. I can go a little while. I tried to, you know, do mud water and the mushroom coffees instead.
Yeah.
But all I ended up doing was putting the mud water in my coffee. So I was just kind of taking in less caffeine.
Yeah.
But yeah, coffee's a weird thing.
It is.
It's so a part of my life. I can't not drink it. It's just, if I drink too much, the caffeine builds up in your system because it has a 10-hour half-life, right? So, you know, 10 hours later, you still got half the caffeine running through your bloodstream. So after over consuming coffee or maybe drinking it till lunch or more, you know, more than just that cup and a half, I'm not able to sleep. I'm wired.
Yeah. I mean, it's the most widely distributed psychoactive drug in the world. I mean, it's a drug. It's a drug, right? So you just said, you know, addicted to coffee. So it's a drug and you have to use it wisely, like any tool in your tool set. I think I quit coffee once for 30 days. And I actually respect people that don't drink any sort of caffeine. I meet them every once in a while. I'm like, oh, are you real? Like, how do you stay alive? And, you know, so no tea, no coffee. They just don't have the caffeine. I think there's something to it. But, you know, so as long as you use it to your advantage, as far as like getting into focus mode, for me, I love the taste, the flavor. In fact, the first espresso I brewed today, I did it wrong. I over extracted it and it tasted horrible. So I had to redo it. A little bit of a nerd in that sense. But I like the taste. I couldn't just sit there. You know, some people are looking for the caffeine, just the injection, right? For me, it's like an experience. I like to sit down, read a book in the morning, whatever, with my coffee. As the caffeine hits my brain, I'm like, okay, time to write or time to, you know, do some creative stuff.
You nailed it. That's exactly how I feel about it. What's in your background there? What are all those lanyards?
Yeah, security conferences and coffee. So the two things I like the most. So these are all different conferences I've been to. You can see the DEF CON badge right here. I think it was last year they had the piano. And then some coffee paraphernalia and, you know, my book over here.
You ever come to North Carolina for either Kakalaki Con or B-Sides?
I am not, but I've been to North Carolina. I've been to RTP. I love it. It's a beautiful place. I love how you have the beaches on one side and mountains on the other side. It's kind of like the Bay Area. So I'd love to come out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me know. We'll have to meet up. And I notice you have a book there. You want to tell us about your book?
Sure. Some time ago, I read a book that said you should write a book. I'm like, well, what would I write a book about? And I'm like, do I write about cats or kids? And I'm like, I don't know. And then I realized that everyone's asking me at the time, people were asking how to get into security. I'm like, oh, let me write a book about security. And so I just kind of sat down and just got all this. It was just a brain dump. If like we sat down for coffee, this is exactly what I would say. And it's a quick read. Alongside of that, I decided to, well, I'm like, well, there's many ways to get into security, not just my way, right? Or not just this method. So let me start a podcast as well. And so as I was done finishing up the book, I started a podcast to interview folks and how they got into security, because there's no one way. So I started a podcast and then kind of been turtles all the way down from there. It was a fun experience, learned a lot, met a lot of really interesting folks. And
yeah, podcast rookie here. This is episode 10 for me, right? So Imperial Security Bureau is still early in its life, right? A lot of people are thinking about starting a podcast or already have. What have you learned so far just running a podcast and, like you said, getting into InfoSec podcast, what have you learned from that?
Yeah, well, kudos to you for getting 10 episodes out. Many people don't get past episode 2 or 3. So kudos to you. There's so many podcasts out there that never made it past 3 or 4 episodes. What I've learned, silence is gold. So my podcast was audio, and I learned this trick, I think it was from Malcolm Gladwell, like in his masterclass course, that just to sit there and allow silence to do the talking. In today's world, we have these uncomfortable silences. But when you're there, especially in an audio podcast, when you're interviewing someone and you ask a question and you just sit there a little bit as after they've answered it and just let that silence like just sit there, you'll find that they just start spilling more information. Right? They open up a little more. It's fascinating. It's fascinating. So that was one thing I really learned. I learned how to be a better listener. It's been a great experience.
What's funny about that is I normally cut out all the, you know, all the delays, the ums and ahs, the gaps, I guess. So it's good whenever you're filming because the silence would entice the guest to speak more or elaborate or whatnot. But then I'm worried that whenever the listeners are there, if there's too much dead air, I try to cut all that out. So maybe I'm wrong about that. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, sometimes we underestimate our listeners. I have to tell you, like an episode, sometimes it ran long. It's like too long. I'm like, oh, this is, nobody's going to listen to an hour and change. And then you find that people just binge all these episodes and they have no problem with these long episodes. I'm like fascinated. So don't underestimate your listeners, your viewers. It's the content. In fact, a lot of times it doesn't matter about the background, doesn't matter about whatever. It's the words that they want to hear. They want to feel the emotion or the conversation or the information, whatever they're looking for, right? Some people are looking for entertainment. Some people are looking for knowledge, a mix of both.
Good mix. Yeah, we try to mix it up here.
Yeah.
Your podcast was about getting into cybersecurity. That's a topic that we talk about a lot. How to break in, job seekers. You know, I'm a recruiter, right?
Yeah. So
I am trying to help people when it comes to finding jobs, help employers find great candidates. So do you have like a top five, if you can wrap it all into like a top five ways to get into cybersecurity?
Oh, top five. Okay. I think getting into any new field, one is to learn the language. So understand the language. So that means you're going to have to consume a lot of media, news, podcasts, video, movies. Just understand the language. You need to know the terminology. And that is going to lead to the next step is getting into the mindset of a security person, right? Do security in your own home, right? Think securely. I mean, do you have 2FA set up on your accounts? Are you living and breathing security, right? So it's kind of like method acting, like start getting into it. And then take an inventory of your skills. The third thing would probably take an inventory of your skills. Understand yourself. I think this is good for any job seeker. Know yourself. Don't underestimate all the experience that you've had throughout life, whether you're an Uber driver or a car mechanic or librarian or IT person. You have a lot of experience under the belt, customer service, that can translate. And then take that and start looking out there in the job field and start matching, start creating a match between what you have and what's out there and then fill in those gaps, right? Either from a technical basis or non-technical. And then probably the next part would be community. So get together with other people on the same path as your journey. Because it's helpful to have someone on your path, on your journey. Find people that either are on the same path as you or have been maybe ahead of you. And that actually feeds into like learning the language and learning what's out there and everything. So, you know, people underestimate networking and the power of it. As humans, we're a social species. You know what I mean? That's how we learn. That's how we find opportunities.
So I was looking at your LinkedIn. You've had an incredible career. Going from engineer to architect to CISO, fractional CISO. Tell us your story. How did you land in cybersecurity?
Oh, okay. Well, once upon a time ago, I was a network engineer and I wanted to be, I was on the CCNA, CCNP path, and I wanted to be a CCIE. You know, CCIE is like this Uber certification in network land, Cisco land, that like, you know, was this coveted back then, still is, I guess. Coveted certification. If you're a CCIE, you're like top of the food chain. So I'm on this path. And, you know, of course, in networking, security is still a component, right? Firewalls and network security and everything is still a component. So that was always a part of my job anyway. I met a CCIE and I told him of my career plans. And he goes like this. He goes, why would you want to be a CCIE? I'm like, because it's amazing. He's like, well, it's boring. I'm like, what? And so he goes, it's boring. Once you create the network and everything like that, then you're done. And that's it. I'm like, huh, really? And for me, I always I had an itch of just like always being challenged, learning. I don't want to hit a ceiling. And so I had to step back and think about it. I'm like, well, interesting. And so there was this up and coming field of cybersecurity. And I'm like, well, that field will definitely, you can't get bored in that field. Like it's always going to be cat and mouse. Like there's no, like always. And sure enough, it's been true. And so I switched. I started studying cybersecurity. I started looking for a job. I found a security analyst job. I had to take a pay cut, right? Because, you know, I was like a senior network engineer, and now I'm like a lowly security analyst. But it was worth it, right? I had to find something, and worked my way up from there. Security analyst, security engineer, senior engineer, architect. And then as a consultant, I was helping companies on the side with their security programs, from compliance, PCI, security awareness, everything like that. And I saw a need out there, that there was a need for startups to have security people, but they couldn't afford security people from a full-time basis. So I'm like, well, there's this fractional CEO model, fractional CMO, fractional CFO. There's got to be a fractional CISO model. And it was still the early days, and just started pursuing that. And here we are.
Tell us about your company, Cloud Security Labs.
Yeah. So, several years ago in my security journey, I discovered AWS and the cloud. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. And so I decided not to look back from the cloud, like not to deal with on-prem ever since. And so in the beginning, I was a specialist in cloud security. So AWS security, it was a very nascent field. There wasn't that many people out there. And so when you thought of Aemon before, it was Aemon and cloud security, because there weren't that many folks out there. So I was doing a lot of things that were really new and upcoming. And so I created Cloud Security Labs, a place for me to work with companies that are in the cloud and kind of generate ideas. Now, fast forward, it's now expanded to a fractional CISO model, where I work with companies as a fractional CISO. And a CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, right, is a person that's responsible for security at a company. But I do it on a fractional basis. So what do? Do I cut myself in half and, you know, distribute myself to different companies? No. What it means is that smaller companies, so it could be a SaaS startup, maybe 50 people, maybe 250 people, whatever it may be, they need a CISO, but they don't need everything from a CISO all at the same time. Some days they may need security awareness training. Other days they may need compliance. Other times they may need sales enablement, working with customers to get security checks across the finish line, things like that. And so here we go. And so I've been doing that full time now. I've been doing the fractional thing full time, kind of weird, right? For 5 years, and worked with like big companies and small companies. And now I'm even training folks on how to be fractional CISOs, because there's a lot of CISOs out there that they've kind of burned out. They don't want to do the whole CISO thing anymore, and they want to do it on a fractional basis. And they're coming to me like, hey, how do I do this? I'm like, okay, so I put together a course, and here we are.
Yeah, it may be relevant to being a fractional talent acquisition partner as well, at least how you structure it, how you spend your time, how you have to do some business development to get clients. You know, I'm open to situations like that as well, you know, fractional recruiting. And kind of makes sense. I guess it's a fancy word for part-time. But I guess when you use the term fractional, you can assume that that means being retained for a monthly fee versus getting paid hourly, where you trade your time for dollars. The client pays to retain you on a monthly basis as needed, not to say that you're going to be devoted to them 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. You're there when they need you, and then doing something else when they don't need you, kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't do hourly, and I encourage other folks not to do hourly as well, because doing hourly, you might as well go work full time, right?
Right.
And you at least you get like equity and things like that. But instead, you know, doing more value-based pricing. And so that's a core component, in my opinion, of being a fractional CISO. Some companies, a lot of companies actually, will just take hourly, multiply it, and say, okay, here's the monthly retainer, here's the number of hours you get, and then use it or lose it model. But at that point, you're kind of like a lawyer. For me, there's a whole thing about not doing hourly, right? When you're not doing hourly, one, the client knows what they're getting, right? It's just a fixed cost. They're not going to get surprised how many hours is it going to take you to do this or that. You tell them, this is it, this is what you get, et cetera, et cetera. And you could do that for, like, say, a particular project, like an internal audit. If you need like an ISO internal audit, it's a flat price, right? And then so it's up to you to be efficient and as fast as possible to get it done.
Well, you train people how to become a fractional CISO and also coach them and determine whether or not that's really what they want to do, right? So what are some of the factors in play there? How do you help people determine whether or not it's a good idea for them or not?
Yeah, that's a good one. So first of all, they need to have had some sort of experience managing, I guess, anywhere from 50, 60, 70% of a security program at one company or several companies. If they don't, then, well, there's another course for that, for like getting security management, right? So that's one thing. Two, is this a temporary thing or is this a lifelong thing? Lifelong meaning like the next 3 years, right? And do you want to just be a solopreneur, just a one-person shop? Or are you trying to grow like a big business and hire people and do that whole kind of agency model? So those are the few things that I ask prospective students as far as like what you're looking for from a fractional CISO.
You had some stats that were interesting too. We were chatting it yesterday, just preparing for this, and it was around like burnout and the average tenure for CISOs. Can you walk us through some of those?
Yeah, so I have a hypothesis that CISOs have a limited lifetime rate, right? So from what I've observed, and of course, there's a lot of exceptions to the rule, but a CISO will typically have about 3 tenures of 2 to 4 years each of CISO leadership. And after that, they kind of burn out. After that, they're like, you know, I want to do something else. I want to sit on the beach. I want to be an advisor, whatever it may be, open a coffee shop. I don't know. And so that's what I've noticed. And not only that, now the CISO job is getting harder and harder with the SEC suing people and personal liability and everything like that. A lot of people are scared of being CISOs. And so they're coming to me, or I'm finding out that they want to be fractional. They want to do the fractional CISO, because the fractional CISO, you get to do the work for a company. You get to change clients, or you have multiple clients. So you get that new nuance, right? You get that dopamine with the novelty of having a new client every so often. And then not much of the responsibility, because you're working with an executive on, or a founder on that side, on the client side. And so you don't have a giant responsibility. Sometimes you do. There's something called, like, you could be the named CISO, which is also fun to do on a particular basis. So that's my hypothesis. I have met CISOs that have disproved that hypothesis. And it's really interesting. They have a really good outlook on life, because, or on security. They get it. They get it that the CISO, and this is core of any CISO knowledge, is that they found the balance. Maybe they found that right company. Maybe they found the executive team to work with, because there's a lot of things that contribute to CISO burnout. CISO burnout is real. I don't want to downplay it. There's a lot of reasons for that. It could be a bad mix of culture, toxic environment, weird expectations from a security perspective.
I have heard it depends a little bit too on the industry that you choose, because if it's highly regulated, financial services, healthcare, a breach in that industry is a lot more dangerous and impactful than, you know, if you run, if you're the CISO for a clothing store or something like that, or an apparel company, it has an impact on your stress level.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's the most stressful job. I mean, I don't know. Every job's kind of stressful. Sales is stressful, right?
Yeah.
I mean, recruiting is stressful. What's the funnest part of being a fractional CISO?
The funnest part about being a fractional CISO, you're working with people that like want to do security. They want to implement security, and they're just coming to you with like open arms. And you're walking in as an expert, giving them all the guidance, and they appreciate your guidance, and they love your guidance, and they take it and they run with it and they implement it. Like, okay, what's next? I love that part. It's very satisfying. I love working on startups. So my focus area is B2B startups. Working with startups, they just have their own culture. I know startup culture, and they appreciate that, because sometimes you have a bad fit. You'll have like an enterprise CISO that tries to do the fractional thing with a startup, and it's just a bad culture fit. So I love working with startups and people that have this like can-do attitude, and there's always a new challenge, and they're open ears. So, you know, as a teacher, when I became a teacher, I started teaching in a community college. It's when I really learned that I was a really bad student in college. And so I had a new appreciation for how to be a good student. I think the best reward a teacher can have, and I think every security person, a good security person is a good teacher. Every teacher wants to have a good student. And to be a good student, you're attentive, you're listening, you're taking the advice, coming back, right? I mean, even like if you're a coach for for whatever business or sports, and the person's not listening to your advice, you're going to fire them. That's what causes some burnout with CISOs, right? Because they're brought in as a CISO, and these companies bring them in as just a checkbox. They don't really want to do security. And the CISO is frustrated because they're like, okay, let's get all this stuff done. And they're like, no, we hired you for you to do it. I'm like, what, I'm not a magical unicorn. Get all this stuff done.
Yeah, I'm not a one-man army. I think that's what everybody's looking for right now. Everybody just wants to run like their own fractional business using their skill set. They want good customers. They want to be good to them. And they want to be respected. They want their time valued, their advice to be valued. Nobody just wants to get into these terrible, toxic situations anymore. I'll be looking for some good situations myself, right? As I go down this journey of doing my own recruiting agency, yeah. I'm not going to really need that many clients, I don't think. Honestly, I just want to find a selective few customers that, you know, people buy from you if they like you and they trust you and you're capable. They know you're capable. I don't really need that many people to support. Just want to work with people who value me and like me, and I'll work my tail off for them. So
how does it work? Because I looked into the recruiting business for a little bit when there was a period of time where I was trying to expand my company, and I hired a person that had a lot of recruiting experience. The industry is kind of cutthroat. I think the business model for it to work, you have to be exclusive to the company, or they have to hire you exclusively. So I'm curious what the business model would be. You know, when you go to client X, are you going to have an agreement that like they're only going to go to you for recruiting, or are you going to be one of many recruiting partners and you're just going to have to hustle and find?
Yeah, the most common relationship is a contingent basis where you got to hustle because you're competing against quite a few other vendors. And I don't think I would even recommend a company just use one vendor, because then that creates a situation where that company doesn't even need to hustle anymore, because who are they competing against, right? There's not even any friendly competition there. They can't lose. So I would at least have two agencies that can kind of compete against one another and keep each other on their toes, right? Oh man, we got to work hard right now because so-and-so, if we don't get on this right now, so-and-so might feel it and then we'll lose it, right? So nobody wants to lose. Oftentimes it's competing. I would love for every customer to sign up as a retained search customer, meaning it is exclusive and they're going to pay me up front to retain the services, pay a retainer part of the fee up front. You can do it however you want, right? However you feel comfortable, but you're paying something up front to start the search, and then final bill is due whenever the person starts work.
Yeah, because it's a lot of work to do a search. It's a lot of work.
It is. Like, oh, yeah.
So if a client hires two agencies for recruiting, what often happens is the same candidates get reached out to at the same time. And it's just like, it's kind of like a race to get to the candidate first. So there's got to be, I think, a better way, like, okay, you go from the East Coast, you go West Coast, like something like that. Or maybe get two agencies, that have specializations on the business side. If I was a recruiting business, which I would find it quite stressful, launch all the search capacity only to not get the deal. It seems like a lot of work to not get a deal at the end of the day. I don't know.
Yeah, you would want, if you ever went into recruiting, you would want to sign up for retained searches. I've always had competition. It's not a big deal. I actually like competition. It keeps me on my toes. Okay. And there should be enough to go around, right? You're not going to win every search, right? You're not going to win them all. And it's okay. There should be enough business out there for everybody to be busy and thriving. But it's just not the case lately. That's not what's happening right now. A lot of the jobs that are available right now, that when a company has gotten to that point where they're willing to pay a fee for a headhunter, it's normally because there's something wrong with the job, right?
Oh.
The requirements are a little bit too ridiculous, or the pay is low, or it's 5 days a week on site and it's not in a popular location. There's something going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of 5 days on site kind of stuff. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I don't know. Mind boggling to me.
Me too. But who knows? Matt, maybe fast forward 6 to 9 months from now, I might have a 5 day a week on site job because I ain't been nothing else.
You know, honestly, in security, you kind of need to be on site at least 2-3 days a week.
Right.
All the startups right now are like going back to 5 days. So So I'm seeing a lot of 5-day, which is fine. I think 4 days would be better because traffic here is crazy. But as a security professional, you need to be in the office because there's a lot of drive-by requests, right? There's a lot of drive-by. And so when you're a security person trying to improve establish or improve the security culture, being there is a big thing. There's a whole playbook I have about just being there, being available, because a good security professional, you want to be approachable. The successful security people are approachable. The ones that are not successful are the curmudgeons and the ones that like people are afraid to talk to, and everything's a no. And you have to make people jump through a million hoops to do something, where you know you want to be like yes, but da, 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 da.
I can see that. Yeah, I know a lot of the curmudgeons. I may have been considered a curmudgeon in the old recruiting office too, but we all have our moments, I guess. But everybody's kind of going through that reevaluation right now, just in their life in general. And that's what makes this idea of going fractional, becoming a fractional, whatever it is that you are, appealing. It's because like early this year, it was like late January, early February, I was like really stressed out. And the job market's been terrible.
Yeah.
And I was stressed out. I was worried about my job. And I was getting up super early for work, like 5 a.m.
Oh, wow.
You know, trying to get after it, trying to work more hours, right? Work 5:30 to 5:30 and, you know, 60 hours a week or more, trying to get more done. One morning, my daughter caught me. She was standing in the doorway of my bedroom, 5 a.m., tying my shoes. And she's just like, "Daddy, why are you up so early?" And I was like, "Well, I got to go to work, baby." And she's like, "But it's super dark outside. What are you doing?" And I was like, "Well, you know, some daddies want to get up earlier so they can win more money." And she's like, "It's not a race, Daddy. My teacher tells me that. It is not a race."
Wow.
And I was like, I was like, "When did she tell you that?" She's like, and she told me at school, if I win, if I beat someone in a race, you know, and I start saying, "I won, I'm the winner, I beat you," she'll quickly come find me and say, "It's not a race." And
nice.
I didn't know how to answer that or respond. I just kind of sat there. And then she came in the room, she grabbed my hand and she said, "Daddy, does this mean if you start earlier, then you can finish earlier and hang out with us?" And I was like, "Exactly." Because I didn't have the heart to tell her no. Like, "Actually, I'm just getting up so I can spend more time. I'm not going to finish early. Yeah. I'm starting early so I can keep, you know, have more hours here."
Yeah.
So it just got me thinking, man. I think everybody's kind of going through that. Now that I'm a free agent, I do want to find a pace of work that is sustainable well into my 60s and 70s. Who knows what's going to happen to Social Security, and inflation's crazy. I may not ever be able to stop working, but I do want to find a pace that I can maintain for a really long time. I'm not trying to work my ass off until I'm 50 and then go vacation, sit on a beach. I want to continue to work, but at a medium pace, you know? So
yes.
Are you feeling that as well?
Oh man, 100%, 100%. Especially as a single dad, there's a lot of pressure. So you know, sometimes we throw ourselves into our work, and there's a lot you mentioned there. So one, my thing I'm trying to do this year is do more with less. There becomes this diminishing return where like you work 8-12 something hours, you don't get that much return for all the hours you put in, right? And you hear all the different mantras, work smarter, not harder, this, that, blah, 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 blah. And all of us are trying to escape this rat race. Like, I don't know how what happened here, but now we're like, how did we get caught in this rat race? As a business owner, I talk with my business owner friends because entrepreneurship is a lonely journey by default. It's a given. And so it's good to have the support structure to talk with other folks. And sometimes you talk to other folks, and a lot of times other, especially agency owners, bring up this notion like, why are we doing this? Like, what's going on? And it always seems like the grass is green on the other side. So the full-timers look at the entrepreneurs and say, "Oh, look at what they're doing." And then the entrepreneurs that look at the full-timers, "Oh, they got it easy." And everybody has like a side hustle, right? And then their side hustles have side hustles. So what is it? Like, it's like this itch to like do more. Like, so one, and maybe we're getting a little philosophical here, but we could bring it back to security. Like, we're trying to secure the soul, right? Secure the person. We have this thing about being productive. Like, you just have to be productive. And if you're not productive, then you're just a loser, right? And we need to undo that learning. Sometimes it's okay to just sit down and be present with your kids and just be there and whatnot. So we're kind of addicted to productivity. But at the same time, we want to have a comfortable living. We want to make money. We want to have stability. We want to have, you know, our vacations and whatnot. So how do we break free? I think one of the good things is to do some planning. One of the things that just helped me recently, I planned out my 3, 5, 10, 15, 20-year goals. And not goals, like, you break it up into three things. Who do you want to be? What do you want to be doing? And what do you want to be like? What do you want to have? Sometimes the grind is like really crazy.
It is a grind. And it makes me think of the 80-20 rule, right? 80% of your results comes from 20% of the activities that you're doing. But the problem is that it's hard to pinpoint what 20% is getting you the 80%. And especially now, especially over the past year, whenever maybe the activities that were getting you all your results in 2021 and 22 are not getting you any results in 2023 and 24.
Yes.
So it makes you wonder, like, it's hard to even figure out what to do right now. Everybody's in this transition period, I think, where they're just reevaluating everything. And it's hard to even tell your kids what to do anymore. It's hard to tell what high schoolers to do, you know, what degree should you get in college? Because, I mean, it was just the CEO of NVIDIA basically just said, like, we're not going to need programmers. Like, you don't need to learn to code anymore. And I'm like, that was my number one thing I would tell kids. It's like, no. You need to become a computer scientist, learn to code, learn Python, React. And now all that's kind of out the window. So what do we tell kids to do now? I don't know exactly. So,
yeah, you know, I was telling my kids that learning how to drive is going to be like an unknown skill, like actually knowing how to drive. Like, in the future, when all the cars are driving and then someone's like, oh, you actually know how to, like, physically drive like a car, you know, that's going to be a skill. The same thing as communicating. Knowing how to speak and talk to people is going to be a skill that many people are not going to have. A lot of kids don't have that right now because they're on social media so much. I restrict, you know, my kids are not on social media, and I really restrict their screen time and everything like that. I tell them, like, listen, you're going to have these abilities. You're going to be able to speak to people. And a lot of folks can't even have a conversation. A lot of people your age can't have a conversation with someone else, let alone an adult. And so that's going to be the differentiating factor. Back to what you said about what works and what doesn't work. I learned a lot in the past year or two. So, you know, sometimes we do things, but we don't step back to see if these things are working out or if they're helping us. Like, for, I think in 2023 or 2022, I put out a lot of videos on LinkedIn. And there was a lot of videos and getting impressions and whatever, but that was the wrong metric. And so that's where I learned late last year about the funnel. Like, there's top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom of funnel. And so I was doing a lot, and then just like a marketing basic. And so I was doing a lot of top of funnel stuff, but not middle funnel or bottom of funnel. Definitely not bottom funnel. So I wasn't closing. So there was all this effort I was doing, but I was looking at the wrong metrics. And kind of like in security. When you're in security, you're running a security program, you want to find the metrics that are valuable to you. And I always tell folks, there's this one metric that's beautiful, that's kind of hard to measure, but it's a beautiful metric. Are people coming to you with security concerns? That's how you know, because what's that metric measuring is security culture. A company with good security culture is going to, by default, inculcate security internally, right? And when you internalize security, like, you internalize any goal, you're going to be working towards it. So you want that engineer to bake security in on their own and not because you push them to, right? So anyway, getting back to, like, business, another thing that I think this recession is teaching folks, and this was the mantra I was going by 2023, is smooth seas don't make a sailor. Somebody told me that quote before, and I'm like, wow, that's fascinating. Because a lot of times in 2021, 22, we had it easy. We had it easy, jobs were plentiful and everything like that. But now you have folks that are struggling and really working hard. But what that's going to do, these challenges are going to force you to kind of be more creative, you're either going to fail, you're going to keep doing the same thing and just hit your head on the wall, or you're going to be creative, pivot, maybe learn some new skills, whatever it may be, to move forward. As a result, I had to learn more sales, right? Like better sales tuning, better marketing, just like tuning my engine. For every challenge, there's, if you embrace that challenge, you can pass it and it'll actually help you in the long run.
That's the question I'm having. What is working? Wasn't working for me, right? I like the content game, and I even took a social selling class, and kudos to Darren McGee. I don't know if you follow him. He's great on LinkedIn, a lot of followers. He does a cohort, and you learn a lot about how to operate on LinkedIn. And I wouldn't be able to operate at his pace and be consistent about every single day posting and every single day these messages, every single day the comments, because it becomes its own job. Like I don't want to be on LinkedIn as my job. I want it to be like 30 minutes. But the way that you can grade what you're doing on LinkedIn is, you're right. Are people coming to you as clients? Is it generating customers? Mm-hmm. And that's what I was hoping that content was going to do for me, but it hasn't. I'm not flooded with job orders because I put videos on LinkedIn. So it's going to fall back into the fundamentals, cold calls, NPCs, and things that always generate a business for recruiters. It's not going to be, content isn't the magic bullet that's going to cure everything. It's not.
No, but it's a tool. So it's a tool and a tool set, and you got to use the tool properly. So if you understand the marketing basics about funnel, and just you create your funnel and you're very purposeful about your content, I think that's the key. Because for a little bit, I was just throwing content out there, and it helped increase awareness. People are like, Eamon, you're just, flooding my feed and whatever. I'm like, my friends were telling us it was a good thing. You have to be purposeful. And I there's this content creator on YouTube, Sunny Leonardizi, and I love what she does. And she has a YouTube video about the marketing hamster wheel. And sometimes it could feel like a hamster wheel trying to create content. And so you have to step back and say, what is this content doing for me? And how can I be more purposeful with it? Just like everything you do in your business. Why do you even have a business, right? Sometimes you need to step back, say, why am I starting a business? Am I just doing it so I could check a box and say, I'm an entrepreneur now? Like, what's the point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I feel like everything I've done up to now has just been experimenting, and it'll continue just to be a lengthy experiment. Every post is a little tiny mini experiment. And you see what happens.
Life is one big experiment. So.
Right. Yeah. So be fearless and just keep testing and find what works. We'll strike gold eventually. Right. But what are some of the BD strategies when it comes to generating leads for fractional gigs, right? As a solo fractional CISO, are there any strategies that have worked very well for you?
To be honest, like most of my business has been referral based.
Okay.
So I think the best thing is to just do good work and be very personable and keep your relationships warm and nice. Reward people that refer clients to you, right? With extra work and whatever it may be. Give, like, so people in general. So I think starting off with your business, if people get more from you than they're paying you, that's a good thing, right? So that's a start. Letting people know that, hey, I'd love to get a referral. I'm happy to give you free services or an assessment. And then just some regular tactics. I think responding to emails and sales things really quickly is helpful. If you're on a sales call, just being forthcoming and just generous with helping them on their journey, on their security journey. But some other BD tactics, just emailing old contacts, emailing old clients, letting them know that you're, open. I think this applies to anyone either looking for a job or looking for clients. Post a useful article on LinkedIn once a day, comment three times, right, on three different articles with something beneficial, so that when they think of Blake, what are they thinking? Blake and this, right? And so they see out there, they know they could associate you, Blake with recruiting, Blake with cyber recruiting, but just getting that out there, because LinkedIn is, that's where people are, and also going where people are. So going to networking meetings, go where your clients are, go out there, be helpful. Send the signal out there, because what's going to happen is when people know that you do something and they see that you're helpful, when someone else asks, hey, I'm looking for this, they'll think of you right away.
Good advice. Ask for referrals, get referrals, reward your clients, be generous, give more than you get, be responsive, be authentic, be humble and forthcoming with your information, follow up, be in constant contact, not too much, but monthly, all right, is okay. And yeah, LinkedIn is a tool. Be strategic about the content you're putting out there. Don't just put anything out there. Have a purpose behind it. So yeah, I like it. Great advice, man. What is going on in the cybersecurity market right now? What do you think's at the forefront of everybody's minds? And you can't say AI. It's got to be something else.
From a CISO perspective, I think they're still banged up about the SEC, all the things that happened. These breaches are getting worse and worse. Supply chain attacks. We have, you know, CDK. I just talked about CDK and Change Healthcare. They're being subpoenaed. They're stressed out. I think the societal pressures right now, a lot of folks are just staying put right now. Before CISOs and just security leaders in general used to be able to just click a button on LinkedIn and find the job within a few weeks. But now it's getting harder and harder. It's a lot more competitive. CISOs are getting laid off. So for the past 9 months to a year, at least, companies that were planning to go public and hired CISOs and built a security function have like let them go. Or companies that are public already, they have this like mature security function, maybe like 5-10 people, and they realize that there's this top person that in their mind, you know, is getting paid a lot, and you know, the biggest cost of company is people. They have pressure to reduce their costs. They're kind of a small company, they're not that profitable, and there's a lot of pressure to be profitable. And so what do? They lay off the CISO. They're like, well, let's just KTLO, keep the lights on mode, right? And so I've seen that actually happen. And so the CIO or CTO will take on the security team because they really did the hard work of getting to a decent maturity level. And they're like, well, let's chop off the CISO. And now the CISO is on the market. Like, I've talked to a few CISOs in this situation.
Me too. A lot, actually. So, and that's part of the problem, right? It makes you wonder the issues that the cybersecurity industry is facing right now. Can they be solved by just hiring more people?
Right now, the whole tech industry has a contraction. Right now, people are very strategic in how they're hiring. You have people that are now doing the jobs of 2-3 other people, maybe 4 even. I've talked to people, not necessarily in cybersecurity, just in tech in general. They are keeping a large amount of direct reports, and they want to have, one guy has 14 people reporting to him, and he wants to keep that because it's going to keep him valuable. If he had two direct reports, and then that rest of the team is reporting to those two, he then becomes less valuable, and they could just like chop him off. And so the whole tech industry right now has gone through a contraction. It's kind of like back to the 2000s. People are doing the jobs of 2-3 other people. Salaries are going down. So people are doing more with less. So as far as like hiring people, no. They may be looking for that one. They're still looking for engineers. But that engineer now has to do the job of like the security lead, the head of security. They have to do compliance, all these things. So like I'm seeing job roles out there, like a security engineer that has to do security engineering, infrastructure engineering, also compliance and a few other things. Well, that's actually a security engineer and a head of security. Right? So that's the jobs of two people. I don't know any security engineer that wants to do compliance stuff and update policies and whatnot. But they're throwing these things onto folks. But then also it's opening an opportunity for fractional CISO folks because a lot of fractional CISOs can function from a security architect all the way to GRC head and compliance manager. Right? They have that flexibility.
Good point. It has been tough. I've not seen near the volume of job orders at all. And even at a customer that I've done business with that would absolutely love to work with me, they're not hiring in the States. They're going to hire in Latin America or India, somewhere else, not the US.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy. Where do you think the opportunities will be for the American workers just in the next year or two?
I don't know. That's a good question. But, you know, back to your point, it's kind of become like a superstorm. We had the pandemic, right, that made everybody used to getting remote only. Now we have the high interest rates where money is now not cheap anymore. And all these things that have kind of flattened the tech field. And all these things are coming together. Where can the American worker find jobs, like the tech worker? Well, you know, according to that CEO of NVIDIA, he says to be specialized, to have some specializations of skills. So before, you know, you could just have, you could be a computer science person with some generic coding experience, but now you need domain experience or domain expertise on top of that to make you valuable. So I think that's going to be the key. I did want to ask you a question.
Sure.
There is something that I saw in this article about like the job market these days. Can you explain ghost jobs? What are the motivations for companies to put ghost jobs out there and what's going on with that? I love your inside perspective on things.
Yeah, two reasons. Pipelining for future jobs, trying to collect resumes for future hires, just fresh candidates in their database. And the only other reason I can think of is that they're just trying to look good to the market for shareholders that they are healthy and hiring.
Yeah.
And it's just the optics of having postings out there, because I'm not going to name the company, but I approached a prior client about a role they had posted, and I had a candidate, of course, and I was going to tell this hiring manager about the candidate that I had for the job they had posted. And it's among 1,500 other jobs that they have posted. A lot of jobs, right?
Wow.
Big Fortune 500 company, ton of jobs. And the guy responded, he's like, hey, man, I'd love to help. We've been on a hiring freeze for the past 2 weeks. And that's been 2 months ago now. They're still on a freeze because I followed up and I had another candidate and a different hiring manager in a different group. Same story. They're still on a hiring freeze, but you go to their website and hundreds of job postings. I'm like, wow. This should be, I feel like it should be illegal to post fake jobs. Maybe I can pull it up.
Yeah. It seems like they want to make themselves look better. I can't imagine, you know, searching for a job, applying to a job. I mean, it's bad enough the work that you're supposed to go through to try to apply to one job. People are applying to hundreds of jobs right now, but there's thousands of candidates that are out there in the market. It's just so bad.
There's also a lot of pressure for hiring diversity, DEI initiatives. You know, I even applied for a ton of corporate recruiting gigs and I haven't gotten a single interview. I mean, it's probably 36 corporate recruiting jobs at companies. I was like, oh, it looks like a neat company. I'd consider being a corporate recruiter there. Hmm. I'm just straight up rejected. I just can't believe that I can't even get an interview. And I wonder if maybe when you're filling out these online applications, right, it's going to ask you all these questions. They want to know who you like to have sex with and where you're from. And, you know,
I wondered about that. Like,
yeah,
I feel uncomfortable answering that.
Yeah.
I talked to an HR friend of mine and he said it actually helps, but like, it kind of feels, I don't know. I feel like it's going to introduce bias.
Why else would they be asking if they weren't trying to discriminate based upon the answers? If you want a true DEI situation, true colorblind recruiting, leave all those questions out of the conversation entirely.
For me, I've never been on the HR side. Well, I've never been on the pure HR side. I've been on the hiring manager part. I want to know where the HR person sees the answer to that according to the pipeline.
There is a podcast that you should follow, and they do a pretty good job of hitting some of these touchy subjects.
Oh,
it's called the Open to Work podcast.
Okay.
And James Hudson is one of the hosts along with Matthew Parker. I know James is a senior like VP of HR, director of HR in the corporate world, and kind of he knows this stuff. So we would need to ask him, like, what are you guys doing with the answers to all these questions here that you're asking on the application form, because it's awfully strange that you would need to know this stuff. Like, what's going on?
It's a requirement. I don't know. It's a requirement by law. They actually have to fill that information. From what I understand, they actually have to collect it because they have, especially government, any company taking government funds, they have to prove the job opening is allowing for people of certain diversity to apply. Not necessarily higher, but they want to see that an applicant pool. So there's requirement. There's reasons why. From what I understand, I could be wrong.
Yeah. I don't even know. I don't know either. Been in recruiting 12 years. So I don't know the answer. I'm not HR. I'm pretty far from HR, actually. We'll lighten it up a little bit. What are you doing for fun these days, man?
For fun? Rock climbing. I like rock climbing. Okay. Indoor rock climbing. So that's been fun. I need to do some camping this summer. So what about you? What hobbies do you like to do?
you know, I got three kids. They're 6 and 4, twin boys that are 4. So hang out with them, keep the house clean, pick up after them. But we go to the pool a lot. There's 2 pools in our neighborhood.
Oh,
we have a golf cart. We love to ride the golf cart. I can never drive the golf cart anymore because my kids always have to drive. They sit in my lap and drive.
That's funny.
Yeah, I got a motorcycle. I got a 2009 Harley.
Oh, nice.
Softail custom. Tinker around on that thing. Go for short rides. I never venture out. I'm not a long.
Do you go by yourself? Because I have a motorcycle license. I've had it for my whole life, and so every once in a while I'll rent a bike. I kind of find riding by yourself kind of boring a little bit. Do you just go by yourself? Like, any good? Is it the road that does it for you? Like, what does it for you?
Back roads and nothing that's too fast. I hate highways. I hate interstates. I just want to go the back curvy roads. And, you know, I'm kind of a let's take the motorcycle to lunch and back type person. Yeah. Where I don't want to go on these long trips. They're awful. I mean, anybody that says that's fun is lying to you, especially on the highway. If you're on the interstate running 80 and you got to do that for a long period of time, it's
brutal.
More like torture than
pleasure. Yeah, it's brutal.
Yeah.
When I rented the bike for a couple of days, I'm going on a bridge and the bridge is freezing. I'm like, this isn't fun, but I imagine like optimal weather, having someone else riding with you, either with you on the bike or another bike, a friend alongside with you, I think makes it more fun. I don't know. I'm curious what your feedback would be.
Yeah. I just have very few friends that have bikes, and there's only one locally that I ride with. And every time he's free, I'm busy. Every time I'm free, he's busy, and we can rarely align the schedules. Lately, all I've been doing is just riding my kids around the neighborhood, honestly. We go for 3 evening rides, since this has probably been once a week. We'll have a night after dinner where I'll just have to go for 3 laps, 1 kid at a time, helmets,
and we just
go to the top of the neighborhood and back. And I don't even get out of third gear. I mean, we're going 35 miles an hour.
That's cool.
But that, I mean, by the time I'm done doing that, let's say I've got 3 15 minute rides, I've had a 45 minute ride, and that's perfect. I would highly recommend that.
my friend, I asked him one time, I'm like, you know, I have a quandary. I'm like, I want the fun of a motorcycle, but the convenience is like, you know, you can't listen to anything really, or whatever it may be. He's like, get a convertible. That's smart. And so, yeah, I got a stick shift convertible. And so it's like the best of both worlds. You know, in California, it works out really good. Last night I was coming, I was sticking a bridge. It was kind of late. And I had the whole bridge to myself, the top down. The weather was beautiful. And I'm like, I just turned off like all the sound. And I'm like, I just kind of took it all in. It was really fun. It was really fun. So I kind of enjoyed it.
Sounds like the golf cart lifestyle.
There you go. Yeah.
For a little golf cart ride. And it's a good stress reliever. Eamon, it's been fun chatting with you, man. I've really enjoyed it, and I think we got some good nuggets here. If you want to reach out to Eamon, he has a website, coffeewitheamon.com, ton of content there, and you can even book time to chat with him. He's got a calendar link. I love the calendar links.
Thank you.
So it's been awesome, man. I hope we can do this again here in a few months.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, I'll let you get back to your day, Eamon.
Awesome.
Good to hang out with you, man.
Yeah, same here. Appreciate having me on.